3, 2, 1. All right, welcome back to the Briones Pickleball Podcast. It's Jordan Briones, your host. I almost forgot what I was going to say. But we're here. Caden's here. Caden's back. Welcome him back, everybody.
Welcome back, kids and coaches.
All right. Different setup today. We're trying to do a few things here. So I know it's a little cord mess here on the table here.
Hey.
But, you know.
Got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right. If you guys don't know that, now you do.
Yeah. So we're definitely here. Again, this is going to be a great episode for all of you today. We're going to be basically answering your pickleball questions. So we have a form. We'll include that below. But a lot of people have been sending a lot of different questions in. And we really want to get those answered. So if you are a pickleball player that's really trying to improve right now, strategy, technique, it's hard to talk technique specifically on a podcast, but we will be getting into a lot of strategy stuff and we'll get into that. But Caden, dude, what's up? What's going on? What's new? The viewers haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. I feel bad. I honestly, I miss you guys a ton, but, been busy. I actually taught an intensive last week.
Ooh.
That went really, really well. Now we're just working on.
Wait. What's an intensive, Caden?
You've never heard of a 2-day intensive?
No. Yeah. Tell me about it.
It's Well, you know, it's a 2-day pickleball camp specifically for 4 players and 4 players only. So I personally get to work with 4 other players on the court. So it's a lot of hands-on stuff. I get to work with them for 10 hours over 2 days, so 5 hours each day. I get to have lunch with them. I get to have dinner with them. So it's 2 days of really getting to know these people, not only as pickleball players, but as people. And, I met some really cool individuals this last week.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Let me ask you this, and for the viewers out there, if you want to actually sign up for a 2-day intensive, that is what we do. And like Caden said, the big thing is that ratio 4-to-1. But compared to other camps and clinics, Caden, or as a coach from the outside, because, if listen to our last podcast, we actually had somebody, on the podcast talking about it. But from a coach's experience, how is it different than maybe some like big camps and clinics?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I've taught some big camps and big clinics with other pros before. And I mean, obviously those are fun because you get to meet so many different people. But I think the one thing that I love as an instructor is seeing the, just the growth and the progression throughout the day. And so for me, like working hands-on with these 4 people, it's literally like a private lesson where you get to kind of be with them and guide them through every step, every single step of the way. So it was just really different because I got to, not only say what I was trying to say, but instead of 60 people asking me different questions, I had 4 people asking me different questions, and I was able to go around and kind of use each and everything that everyone said and, kind of tie it together. And it was honestly a very rewarding 2-day intensive where, like, not only did they come out of it feeling great and feeling better about their game and, what they need to work on, but also just like as a coach, it's so rewarding to see them find happiness and like, and joy in the progression and seeing the little things. And this was a 4-0 group. So, I mean, 4-0 players, it's not like you don't know how to play pickleball. It's just you need to refine specific techniques. We're talking a little bit more about strategy. We're breaking down points. We're breaking down a bunch of different things. So it's just a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Really good, man. Really good. Yeah. If you want to sign up for a 2-day intensive, go ahead and click on, there'll be a link below. But just like you, Caden, I love, like, get, really getting to know the players. And then the biggest key thing, and I'm not trying to make this a whole salesy thing, but the biggest key thing why players, I think, come, they trust us, but not just that. You don't know what you don't know. So a lot of players come to train because they've plateaued in their mind, which isn't what's really interesting is I've been thinking about this, Caden. It really isn't true. Like, they're not really plateaued, but they don't know how to actually
get better
and break through.
For sure.
So in a way, it's kind of true, but it's kind of not. And yeah, we unlock that for them because there's many things that players do on the daily that they have no idea that they're doing. But these little adjustments, we know that are huge.
Yeah, so. For sure.
But so if you want to sign up there, check out the link below. Lastly, we are part of this app, My Pickleball Coach. So if you do want to get direct coaching from your smartphone, you can actually upload video or footage of you playing and we can coach you on an app right there. Go ahead and check out that link. Go to the link below and then you can get someone on our team, the Briones Pickleball team, to coach you. So
I love yelling on FaceTime.
It's not FaceTime.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But tournament wise, any updates, Caden? I know that like Nationals is coming up. And
we have Houston this weekend, APP Houston this weekend. Originally was supposed to be playing it, kind of last minute backed out, which is all good. I don't mind the little weekend off of tournaments. I'll just kind of work on my body this week, relax, take some time for myself to get ready for Nationals. But I also have some Tuesday night pickleball matches coming up soon too. So got some big events coming up. You know, November is going to be kind of crazy. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, if you haven't seen yet, if you're audibly listening to this, we appreciate you. Audibly or not, if you can leave us a good 5-star review, that would be great. We really appreciate it if this podcast helps you out. But if you're watching this, you can see on the table right here, new paddle release today as we speak, as we release this, the premier control paddle of the year again.
Wow.
Obviously, that's my opinion. But go to our channel. We just dropped a paddle review.
Is it your personal paddle choice right now?
We will see, Caden. Okay. But you know, you kind of know me. And
I do.
I like that soft.
You like that soft controlling paddle.
I like that soft touch.
Which is so funny because I'm like the exact opposite. Well, it makes a little bit more sense, actually. You're more family man, 30-year-old, you know. I'm more wild 20-year-old. It just...
Hey.
Boom, boom, chocolate.
Maybe it's a little... We'll have to do a survey if it's kind of like... personality
I drive a Tesla, you drive a minivan. I live in an apartment, you live in a house, I have a pool, you have a pickleball court.
There you go. Okay,
that's all starting to make a little more sense.
Lux is out. It's a great control paddle. Just right off the bat, if a shout out to Selkirk, obviously a big sponsor of ours, we really love them. If you want to check it out, go ahead and go check out our paddle review on the channel. If you are struggling with controlling the ball, this is a great paddle for you.
Yeah.
If you do like something poppy, kind of like Caden really loves the pop, like I just know that you wouldn't play with this paddle. You might enjoy it, but
I think I'm getting mine in probably next week. I've actually hit with Pesas already a little bit. Off the bat, he didn't put any lead tape on it. So
really? But he is now, though. He has lead on it now, or what do you think?
Well, when I used it, he didn't have any on it. So I'm probably gonna add some lead tape, bulk it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And we'll see. You know, we'll see if I like it. But off the bat, it was a little soft for me. Yeah. Soft for me personally.
Well, it's really soft.
Yeah,
it's really soft. I like that, but. New paddle there. Go check it out. Anything else? And we're going to hop right into the Q&A. What you all came for. Caden has been gone for a little bit. So we are going to hop into your questions again.
Heck yeah.
Click a link below if you want to send some questions in. And we're going to try to periodically do this every now and then.
Yeah. So. I think we should. I wish we could do like a live chat where like people could ask us questions like on the spot.
We can. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll get to it.
So let me pull one up here.
Yeah. No, I I'd like to actually show you guys this drink I've been drinking. It's called Power Lift.
Not a sponsor.
It's not a sponsor right now. It's pretty tasty. 10 grams of protein in a water-infused drink, which is kind of crazy. Like, that's not something I'm used to, because usually I just drink, like, massive protein shakes. But these have this has zero sugar, no artificial flavors or sweeteners, lactose-free, and it's keto-certified. I'm not on a keto diet here, but this berry strawberry, 10 grams of protein. I mean,
dude,
I'm drinking it, you know?
That was a long commercial for whatever you're drinking, and they're paying us nothing. So
this is also true. So Powerlift, if you're listening to this, we're going to need to see something.
All right. Connection issues. Don't worry about that screen. Okay. All right. So here we go. We'll just start with this one, and it's kind of like a paddle question. We're going to get into more strategy questions and things like that. But
heck yeah.
This is an interesting question, and not just Selkirk, but we can talk about different paddles. But
for
this,
sure.
This one says, what Selkirk paddle would be good for an intermediate 3-5 player with not, and I don't have that much power on my own.
Okay.
And seems like this person has tried out a lot of different paddles.
Yeah.
But again, when we're talking, it's funny because when we're talking about, you know, you're gonna give the Lux a try and things like that. What, you know, not from your perspective, because your perspective and my perspective on our own games is a little, like, depending on your strengths and weaknesses. So what would you recommend, Caden, when you kind of see somebody's game? Like, how do you kind of navigate that? Because really at the end of the day for me, it's on the feel of it and what you like. But anything you can tell, like, or speak of, if you're a banger, if you're more of a soft player, like, what would you recommend?
Yeah, well, I think personally a paddle should typically kind of help you out in the areas that maybe you're not so strong at, right? Mm. So if you lack control, or if you lack power, those are going to be paddles that you want to have, right? So for example, right, Jordan has power. So what does he use? He uses a controller, a more controlling paddle, so he can really dial in the resets, really find the control in the soft game. And now Jordan has a soft game as well, right? But this kind of amplifies that, right? It's making him that much stronger because he already knows he has the power, so he's just really making sure his soft game is always dialed. For me, I came into pickleball not having necessarily the best technique, so I had to kind of learn all of that from scratch. So in specific areas, I'm maybe not the strongest. So for me, I actually prefer a poppier paddle, and my feel and my control is pretty good. So so a Selkirk paddle, did he ask specifically if it's a Selkirk paddle?
He did, but we don't have to answer exactly a Selkirk.
Yeah.
Just in general, like, what would you
well, if I had to say Selkirk, I would probably say maybe consider trying the Halo. If not a Selkirk paddle, he said, what's a good paddle where, like,
he was saying that he struggles with power, like getting his own. So
I would say, like, maybe like a Vatic Pro would be a really good paddle. Like, their thermoformed paddles are really good. Or like maybe like a 14 millimeter like carbon or a Yola.
Yeah, and just in general, everyone watching, I mean, usually it's not always the case, but, you know, usually the thinner millimeters, a little bit more power, and that's one thing you can kind of gauge and look at, especially if you're, like, lacking power. If not, if you need control, thicker paddles, like, for example, this Lux here, I think is like 18 to 20.
I think it's 18.
18 millimeters. So it's a very, very soft paddle.
She thick, for sure.
But yeah, so that's it. Next one, we're going to move on because we want to get to a lot of questions here as much as we can here.
Oh, yeah.
This one says, how can you be more proactive and anticipate where your opponent is going to hit their shot? I am playing more reactive than proactive now, and I find myself out of position to return their ball. Mm. What should I look for? Now, I have a lot of thoughts on this.
I do too, actually.
but Caden, let's just get it. And by the way, that's a very broad kind of like question.
It is.
But to simplify it, for this person, you don't know what kind of shots they're really talking about, right. But what would your answer be to that?
Based off of what I've heard, I'm actually going to say footwork. Because typically, if your footwork is not on point, you're typically not in a position to be hitting the ball in the places that you want, but now you're just kind of dumping the ball off and saying, I hope I get it over the net, yeah. And then reacting to your opponent's next shot. So, like you said, that is a pretty broad question, but I'm going to say footwork, just because usually if your footwork is off, you're not going to be the guy who's in control of the point. So,
yeah,
I don't know. What? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. And I have no idea why we have a random... Sorry about the... we have a random... If you're not watching...
Is that a sheep?
We have a random sheep on the screen
with
here.
A lightning bolt okay. on its body.
Yeah. But
it's a sick tattoo. I think I might find some room for that.
Yeah. Anyways, proactive versus reactive. I do want to talk about one thing. So being proactive, or let's talk about reactive first. This is how we not want to play. And I think most 3-5 and below players, I would say, are generally reactive. I mean, would you agree?
No, 100%.
So it's like the ball comes here. I have to get to ball.
Right.
And I have to hit ball.
Hit ball, yeah.
And then it's kind of like that. So the difference between lower level and higher level play, I would say, is that kind of decision making and is that switch. So being proactive, though, is expecting where the ball is going to go.
Right.
And then making a decision beforehand.
Right.
On what I'm going to do with that ball.
Exactly.
So for example here, here's just like a little scenario. Footwork, Caden, I actually really, that's actually very important, because if our footwork is off, then we're just going to be hitting defensive shots.
Right.
So being more proactive, we're going to be hitting more offensive shots. But here's a little example. Hopefully you all can think about this. If I'm in a backhand and cross court rally, I'm on the odd side. And let's say you and me are duking it out, right? Backhand and backhand slice or something, right? Instead of just trying to just get the ball back over, like here's a little rule for myself, okay? When my left foot gets across that sideline, okay, just imagine you're on the odd side.
Yeah.
And when you pull me out, when my left foot gets past that sideline, I'm going to reset towards somewhere in the middle of that court. And then I'm going to then from there, because now you're going to take a forehand, right?
Right.
Or your partner's taking a backhand. But from there, I know you're going to either A, you're going to send it back to my backhand.
Yep.
Or B, you're going to come middle to the middle to my forehand. So from there, I know those are the possible options unless you speed it up.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But from there, I already kind of know. So then when you hit me that next shot, I have a plan before.
Yep.
Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, man, if they hit here, then I'm going to hit here. But over time, and this is why it's really important to drill, but these different scenarios, when I go out there and practice, I'm pretty much thinking like, okay, if they hit it over here, I have this option or that option.
Right.
And then when they hit it to this next spot, then I actually have one or two options. Now, I wouldn't say coined this, but I kind of developed this. It's called a two-shot process.
Yeah.
And as a good player, I think it's very crucial to when you receive a certain ball, right? It's crucial to have at least two options of where to go.
Yeah.
So like option A, right. Then like option B.
There's option B, right.
And we could dive like really deep into that, but on the reactive versus proactive side, those are the kind of things.
Yeah, I think that's honestly the biggest difference in skill levels between like 3-5 and 4-0 too is point construction, right? If you are thinking about what you are trying to do with the ball instead of just hitting the ball, it makes a night and day difference for you. And it's funny because when you said that, little like, you know, when we're reactive, it's just like run the ball, hit ball, you know, that's like, for me, like as a baseball player, it used to drive me insane when like parents in the crowd would just be like, okay, Jared, see ball, hit ball, see ball, hit ball. I'm like, there are, okay. I'm
just Wait, is that what they said?
Oh my God. That's like parents who don't know how to play baseball's like favorite line. Okay, Jonathan, see ball, hit ball. Get after it, kid. Come on. See ball, hit ball.
Did they do with that accent too?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. So that's again, we can, these are things that we can expand for hours on, but we're going to, again, hopefully that gives you some sort of answer. Okay. So we're going to move on here.
Ball, hit ball.
And again, thank you for sending these questions. We're going to try to get through as many as possible. Here we go.
Heck yeah.
I am a right-handed player, but I can switch to my left hand and put a decent dink or drive. While I do want to develop my game so that I am effective with both a backhand and switching, which do you think I should concentrate on? So I actually, believe it or not, I kind of get this question, and in intensive, I get players who like to switch, who are just kind of do that often. What are your thoughts, Kenny?
So believe it or not, I'm actually ambidextrous. I probably could play.
I don't believe it.
You should.
Just kidding.
So one thing you guys probably know about me or don't know about me, depending on who you are. I play every sport that I've ever played left-handed. Golf, baseball, basketball. I throw left-handed. I kick left-footed. I do everything left-handed except for pickleball.
And ping pong.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess. Ping pong, yeah. Well, and ping pong, okay? But I don't really play ping pong. I just fool around with ping pong. But
Wait, now you used to try tennis. Did you play left or right?
I never played tennis.
Oh, I thought you at least tried it.
No, I've played tennis like twice in my life, and it was after I started playing pickleball.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I never played tennis. My dad tried to get me into it when I was younger. Uh-huh. I was so young, I don't even know what hand I played with. But like, being naturally like ambidextrous, like I obviously was like, okay, well, I don't know why I picked up a paddle with my right hand, but let's see how good I am with my left hand. And obviously when I first started, I was not very good, but as I've gotten better, just kind of knowing what I need to do, hitting left-handed shots is not super hard for me. It's obviously still a little bit awkward. But as you're trying to progress, I personally would say it's not a bad thing to use your left hand, because you can eventually develop that into kind of maybe like a two-hand backhand or something sexy like that. I mean, obviously the two-hand backhands are here to stay with pickleball, and there's only more and more players using it. But I would also say focus on that right hand more. I wouldn't really use my left hand unless I were trying to use it for my two-hand backhand, or if it was really just like a last second desperation shot. Mm-hmm. But I'm not huge on just kind of switching hands, you know, when the ball's to your right and then the ball's to your left, just because the game is getting so fast. You know, you don't want to be caught having to switch hands as someone is speeding up right at your chest. So that's just me, but you know, you go for it, because you mess around with your left hand a lot every now and then.
Yeah. Okay. So just short answer, I'm on the same wavelength there as Caden. I deal with, obviously we teach a lot of different players.
Yeah.
If you're, and by the way, here's something really interesting, and everyone who has experimented with this. Now, mobility is a big thing.
For sure.
There's some players that aren't as quick and can't get there. So it would make sense strategically and you know, on that base where if they can't get there, right, then going to a left. And I've actually dealt with and modified different players who just aren't as mobile, but it makes it an easier shot. So
for sure,
on that occasion, maybe. But most other players, though, who are quite mobile and can get there, the reason why they're switching to their left is because their footwork is bad.
Right.
So they're actually making up for their bad footwork.
Right.
And that is, so that's where the issue for me is. There's nothing wrong with switching hands, but to hit a strong shot on your backhand and develop something strong with your forehand and your backhand, whether you're a righty or a lefty, I think that is really important. So
yeah, no, the technique on the backhand side, if you're not in a good position, is a lot harder if the technique is off, right? So if your feet aren't moving to get yourself in a better position to hit your backhand, it's 20 times harder than it is with the forehand, which is why I think most people are just like, oh, well, this is so much easier for me, Sonny.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm like, well, yeah, I know, but pick up those feet, Susan, now.
Susan. All right. All right. Let's get on to the next one here. Here's an interesting one. I observe that most, if not all pros, use a volley serve. Is this because they've been in the game so long before the drop serve was approved and they are used to it, or do they not like the drop serve? Answer.
On the pro tour, we are not allowed to drop serve.
Wait, okay. Hold on. So I remember that came into play, but actually I thought they took it out. Is that true or not?
No. No, we're not. No, we're not. I actually tried it one time.
Okay.
So they made me reserve.
Got it.
So I served again. They didn't fault me for it, but
got it.
I think I was losing in a singles match, and I was just like, Evan.
Okay. Besides that, though, why do you think, even when the drop serve was legal for the pros, why do you think most pros didn't use it? What would be your reasoning?
In my personal opinion, I think most pros kind of just looked at it and said, yeah, this is stupid. I'm just going to work on the serve that I've used for the last few years. Personally, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. That's kind of stupid. That's kind of dumb. I didn't really think much of it. Like, even with the spin serve, I was like, oh my God, this is dumb. But you know what? Like, the spin serve definitely made the game very, I wouldn't say fun, but it was different for sure. I think the spin serve, the drop serve, all those different types of serves that they allowed in that 1 year of pickleball, I think it was like, what was it, 2021? It's 2021. Yeah, it was wild year of pickleball. I mean, I have never seen so many free points coming out of serves. And
yeah, so that's, if you haven't been in a game a long time, that was a spin serve
era.
But
Zane Navratil would love to have that back.
Yeah,
but
he's doing all right. He's doing all right without it.
I love that guy, dude. He I just played with him in Austin like a couple weeks ago, and gotta say, man, he's pretty filthy. He's a pretty filthy pickleball player.
All right, well, shout out to Zane. For the question though of drop versus volley, again, the biggest advantage for the volley serve is you can hit it at a higher contact point.
Yeah,
when you drop the ball, even, it's so funny, I see players like tippy like let me see, tippy toes up here, but when you drop the ball, even at a high point, it doesn't bounce as high. So that's why,
unless it's wintertime and the ball's rock solid, but
yeah, maybe. But that's why you see the likes of Tyson, you see players getting really close to that legal limit when you can hit the ball at a higher contact point. You can hit it more flatter,
yep,
with more pace,
yep.
And you know, you can actually hit there and get topspin and kick it from there. So I think that's why most pros.
Yeah, for sure. I think most pros genuinely did kind of just look at it and go, that's kind of stupid. But also, from a technical standpoint, I mean, we can kind of mess around with the border of where our serves are at in terms of legal and not legal. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Ben or Tyson or all these guys serve on social media and people are just in the that serve's not legal. I'm like, okay, well, if it's not legal, why are they not getting called for it? Does that make any sense? No, it does not. So obviously we're pretty close to the borderline. Some players are, at least. But that point of contact is allowing them to be a little bit bigger and get some weaker returns. So
yeah. Yep. So that's that. Here we go. Here's one here. With coaching and clinics costing so much. It's funny.
Yeah.
At what level of play would you consider it worth paying for coaching? Also, how do you recommend going about finding a drilling partner?
Good
question there.
That is a great question. I think there's never a wrong time to get coaching. I think whether you're just starting out or you're a high-level pickleball player who's still looking to continue to get better, I think there's always opportunities and times to look for coaching. Obviously, I think it's hard right now. Like, you know, if you're a low-level pro right now, it's hard to find higher-level pros who will just be like, oh, yeah, like, come on, I'll train you. I'll get you better. And even at the highest level of pros, you know, there's not really coaches of the game who have been around for years and years and years who can give insight and whatnot. But whether you are starting yesterday or you started 4 years ago, I think there's never a wrong time to learn, yeah, you know, about your game, about, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with pickleball. So 2-5, 4-5, 5-0 does not matter.
I like it. I like it, Caden. My spiel on that is, again, as we're teaching more and more players, Caden, and teaching these intensives, these are two things I hear. And I try to, after the intensive, I do a little interview with them on how the experience was. And obviously, great feedback. Caden, I actually came and did, after yours was done, I interviewed a couple of your guys.
Mm-hmm.
But two things I hear. And this is basically, it sums up the coaching thing.
Yeah.
Number one, I hear all the time is, you don't know what you don't know. So what that means is, even in my game, I'm a coach, I have a different eye, but I don't really know what I'm doing unless I watch video of myself,
yep,
or someone else can come in and see. Like, and just for example, I have like a kind of like a business coach,
right?
Right. And why would I get coaching there? Because I don't know what I don't know. I want to be able to maximize what I'm doing, my strengths, my weaknesses, and I want to plan. Like,
right.
That's why I pay monthly a good sum of money to get the coaching. So when players come to us, and depending on where you are in your journey, pickleball journey, to get to 3-0 to 3-5, to get to 3-5 to 4, 4 to 4-5, there are some things you're going to have to develop, but they're probably things that you are doing that you have no idea, like, right, zero idea. Like, obviously we work on the court very specific in small groups, Caden, but like, I can't tell you how many times that I've like, you know, let's say we're working on a dink or something, or a speed up or something, and I tell them one thing, like, okay, so let's drop that right foot back, let's shorten that backswing. Then they do it, and then it's like the same exact way. Like,
yeah,
right. They have just no awareness of like, right, what they're doing, and that's what we're there for. So that's the one thing. Second thing I would say is, you don't know what you don't know, and secondly, what I hear all the time, and one of the people in your last intensive, Caden, actually said, I wish I would have taken this like a long time.
When I started.
Yeah. So nothing wrong. And if you don't get coaching, that's okay too. But we do, and you will, we as in even us, have every person in the world will develop bad habits at some point.
For sure.
It's like fixing them, cleaning them up. So that's my thing. I've had a lot of people tell me that, man, if I just took this intensive like 3, 4, 5 years, a year ago, like, man, I would have just been totally in a different place. Cause now we got to like get through those fundamental key things. And then now we got to push them, add new shots, things like that.
But, right. Well, and I mean, even in my last intensive, right, like you talked to some of the guys, it was considered a 4-0 group. And we spent a lot of time just talking about footwork. Because even for guys who are 4-0s and are, you know, decent pickleball players, even they can get, you know, lazy with their footwork. And once you start to get lazy with your footwork, that's when all things break loose. So having to just kind of like talk to them about footwork and really getting them to realize the importance of it and why we don't just do it to get the ball, but to do what we want with the ball. Yeah, you know, it's kind of just like breaking down the and that's what I love about those intensives is like you can break down piece by piece why everything does what it does and why it all comes together so we can do what we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Really good, man.
That's good. Yeah. Footwork, man. Just do it.
Footwork's big.
Just do it.
All right, here we go. Hopping in. Next question here. Is there a rule of thumb?
Oh.
For hitting ground strokes and dinking shots. That is hitting the ball when it's on the rise, at the apex, or descending for best control of placing the shot. This is something that I go over big time, especially in our intensives. But Caden, reset. I'll reset, double-handed reset back that question to you.
Double-handed reset. Well, yes, we are always looking at height of the ball for opportunities, you know, on whether we are dropping or driving. There are a lot of things that go into consideration for when we're going to start to either look to add pace, maybe take pace off. But that being said, if a ball is bouncing higher and you know, I can kind of peek at big picture, which means I can see, you know, everything that's going on in front of me, which means my opponent's paddle, their body positioning, the ball. If I can see all of that, that's when I'm going to start to be a little bit more aggressive, attack balls a little bit more. When balls are coming lower at my feet. By the way,
the question was, and you're answering it well, but specifically, on the rise, at the apex.
Oh yeah.
So what are they? What's ideal for dinks and ground strokes? Just throwing out
for ground strokes, as in at the baseline.
Yeah, sure. Ground strokes first, and then dinks.
Interesting. Okay, so she went from the kitchen line to the baseline. Okay. Yeah. So well, typically I will hit most of my shots in the apex, just because that's where I'm most comfortable. But on the rise, I will usually take I'll take some ground strokes off the rise. I don't really like to because it's just a little bit too straight for me. I'll usually take my drives as it's kind of falling a little bit too, just because I like to come underneath my balls a little bit more.
So what about dinks?
For dinks, I'm going to mix it up. I will never take a dink on the rise, though. That's the one thing I will say. I will never take a dink on the rise. I'll usually take a dink.
Unless you're forced to.
Well, of course, unless I'm forced to, but
yeah, we're getting really nitty gritty here, dude.
I never get forced to take a ball on the rise.
Actually, you know? You take quite a bit. You take a lot more on the rise half volley dinks than me.
I wouldn't call those on the rise though. I'd call those short hops.
It's the same thing, dude.
I guess not really.
Same thing.
I have different terminology for on the rise.
Okay,
and short hop.
You and me are gonna have to talk about terminology, but you tell me what's the difference between on the rise and half volley or short hop.
Well, a short hop is a ball at your shoelaces because
okay.
You short hop it off the, okay. Right off the bounce.
All right.
A ball on the rise is a ball rising up into your body.
Okay.
So like the ball is rising into your body and yes. Kind of going to, yeah. So I don't ever really take them here. I usually either take them off the short hop.
We'll have to take it.
We're going to figure this out, guys.
Yeah, we're going to figure this out. Just tennis terms, though, just really quick. And those of you watching, on the rise and short hop are basically the same.
See, I never played tennis, so.
But maybe that's just a terminology thing. Okay, so just really quick. One of the, and you're really good, Caden, really good answers. Again, for ground strokes, it is ideal for the most part to take it at that apex or take it a little bit after. The reason why is higher contact.
Yep.
And then secondly, you know, you have more time.
Sure.
Obviously, you got to create space. Now, hitting a ground stroke on the rise as a short hop, whatever you want to call it, right after it bounces, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's difficult. It's more difficult. So you're hitting it right off the bounce.
When you say on the rise, you mean short hop?
Same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So right after.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't ever do that.
so right after the bounce.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
never.
Again, when you do that, it's very difficult and you have a lower contact point. Now, for dinks, and if you come to intensive, you're going to hear this and we're going to work on it. But three categories of things here, okay? And this is what I like to say, and this is how I teach it. It's one, we got volley dinks. Two, we got off the bounce dinks.
Yep.
Three, we got short hop dinks.
Yep.
On the rise dink, same thing, or or half volley dinks. I'm same thing. But those are the three categories. When you're taking something off, off the half volley, okay, on the rise as a dink, number one, you can't put a ton of spin on it.
Yep.
And number two, it's going to typically be defensive. So that's why that's my third option. Now, then we can talk about, I won't go specifically into it, but dinking balls out of the air is good. And then letting balls bounce into that apex. So maybe we can attack it. Maybe we can create some offense. That's really important. But on the rise as a half volley is typically, okay, so typically always the last option, because of the amount of offense you can create. So
I love that. It's so interesting that you use short hop and on the rise as the same terminology. I've just like never noticed that. Cause like as an instructor, like I always like I use short hop, I use apex, I use in the air.
Yeah. By the way, those are all different.
No, I know. But I usually will tell people like, you don't want to take a ball on the rise.
Yes, and I agree.
But that's because I think on the rise is also very different than short hop.
Okay.
But that's just like, as a baseball player, a short hop ball.
Got it.
And an on the rise ball is very different.
Got it. So that's just maybe your baseball thing. But we'll clarify.
We'll clarify. We're gonna get this handled. We're gonna get this figured out. One of us may have a black eye next week. Yeah. We'll see.
By the way, if you're not gonna take it out of the air, allowing that ball to come up to the peak, though, to the apex, mm-hmm. is ideal.
That's 99%
of the time.
Your main goal once you don't let it.
There you go.
Once you don't take it in the air.
Okay. Sure. Here we go. So now we're going to hop right in. Here we go. How do I correct? This is kind of broad, but we'll go over it.
All right.
How do I correct bad habits? I've been playing 2 years. I never had any paddle or tennis training or pickleball training. I'm out of plateau and I need to correct my bad habits.
All right.
That is a loaded question.
That is a loaded question.
Kaden,
I think it's a common theme in pickleball, though. Players focus more on their results and getting the ball over the net than what they're actually doing when they're playing pickleball. So what do I mean by that? That means, for the most part, players see ball over the net as good, ball into the net as bad. They don't see it as, what am I doing to miss this ball into the net, or what am I doing to make this ball over the net? So in order to correct bad habits, all right, the first thing you need to do is kind of take a peek at your own game and say, what am I doing here that's making me miss this ball over and over and over again? So you can't look at just the ball and say, oh, it went over the net. That must have been a good shot. You have to break down your shots and your shot selection to really kind of find the solution to what you need to do.
Yeah, I like that, dude. One of the things that I would say, this is a tough question.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, so this is how I start. How do you correct bad habits? Number one, it's kind of like that, that saying, like, the first thing you have to do is recognize or admit the bad habits. So that's step number one. If you don't know, here's the problem. This is why it's good to get solid coaching, because you don't know what your bad habits are. Now, if you do, let's assume he does, right? Let's assume he does. It's really important that you actually work on them and then reassess.
Yeah.
So like, let's say your habit. Oh, here's one of mine that I have worked on through the years. And I think I've said this on the podcast, but I've also said it to you, Kaden, I think before, but my contact on my forehand drive specifically also drops, used to be very late. What that means, it didn't used to be quite in front. I used to hit that ball on the side of me. And that was a bad habit from tennis. And that's not because of tennis. That's because my contact in tennis was bad.
Nah.
So I brought that over to pickleball. But I've had to move that contact point close, more and out in front. And I've done that by drilling it, being really aware of it, and then also kind of recording myself to see, because I could think I'm doing one thing. I go for my shot, I do it again, and then it's like, and I watch it back. It's like, oh, it wasn't that in front as I thought. But that's just one example.
Yeah. So. No, you learn from your mistakes, and you have to be able to kind of recognize what you're doing. And one of the biggest things that Jordan did mention was proper coaching. All right. If you're going to get coaching, don't just hire someone who's going to hit balls at you and say good as you hit your shots.
You mean don't get it from Craigslist or anything?
Yeah, but maybe not Craigslist. Who knows? Maybe not even Yelp. Maybe not even the local person coming up to you saying, hey, I can give you lessons. But proper coaching should be coaching that is technical, that is helping you out in a way that they're seeing things that you don't see for yourself.
I got one, Caden.
Oh.
How do you know if you are currently getting coaching right now? How do you know whether to continue or to drop your coach? And this is a serious question, because like most players won't know.
It's
like,
true.
You know what I mean? So it's true. No, but like just practical, like practically.
Right.
Right?
How do you know?
How would you know? Go ahead.
How would you know? Gosh, man, that's really tricky. I've never had that happen to me, but I've never had that happen to me where like someone was like, oh, hey, like you're not doing what I need you to do, so I'm going to go take a lesson from this guy. Yeah. But golly, man.
All right, I'll start.
You start. Go. Yeah, I don't know.
I thought he was going to have a good answer.
I was not. No.
Don't worry about it. All right, so here we go. I just mentioned I have a business coach.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I am not seeing results.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Very easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I'm not seeing results and I am in the same place and my knowledge hasn't really dawned, but even my execution, if I don't see more sales coming, if I don't see growth in the business or whatever, if you don't see a growth in your game or you feel like you're stuck in the same spot and you've gotten coaching for a long time, but you're seeing very little progress. Now, could be a couple of things. Could be maybe you're not doing what they're saying. Could be maybe you're not practicing enough, but it could be that you're really not getting the right adjustments that you need.
So. Yeah. Well, so you know what's funny is I don't know why I had such a hard time with this, but I was thinking like if I was the student, you know, like I don't know why. I genuinely I think there are so many people who just like take lessons because they're like, oh, this should make me better, but they don't actually like know if they are or aren't, so they just kind of keep going with it to see if they do. And I would say especially for like players who like maybe who don't play tournaments, there's not a whole lot to say, oh, I am getting better or I'm not getting better, unless you're like going out there every day and practicing and drilling and playing games. And you know, but I've seen a lot of pickleball players who just take lessons and they're like, oh, well, you know, he's really nice, and you know, he's really nice. And I'm like, okay, so are you learning anything, you know? And but they don't know, they're not really sure, you know. Yeah, so like sure. There are a lot of pickleball players who just take lessons to take lessons because they think they're getting better, but they're not actually really getting that much out of it. So like I think you said it perfectly, like obviously if you're not getting the results that you want, but like in terms of as a player, sometimes you don't really know if you are or aren't.
Yeah,
you know,
it's difficult sometimes. Yeah, you're right.
Be careful.
All right, there you go. Here we go. Jordan, what is the process to, now I screened this question, revise, I think you mean switch, but what is the process to revise grips during play? I use the continental grip, but I hear that I should revise to best, but hear that I should revise the best hit backhands. Please advise. Okay. So, I think that what he meant is, or she.
I just got a concussion. What?
basically switching grips. And I get this question a lot, especially up at the non-volley zone. especially in our 4.0 plus intensives, we're, you know, I teach a lot of different grips for different options. Okay. Yep. You don't have to, but, and when we're talking about players in the pro tour and when we talk about what they do, there's a wide range. There's yeah. players who stay in the same grip. And then obviously there's a lot of grip switching, but, what would you say just, in general, Caden, what do you think about, you know, if they're in the right, should people experiment with different grips? Should people just stay? What do you think?
I think you should stick to your guns. I think personally, in this case, he said he plays mostly in continental. If you're comfortable in continental, I would say, you know, ride it out, see if it works. If you find a place where maybe, you know, you're not getting to where you want and you feel like you can get more off of something, then you know what? Give it a try. What I will say is, if you are going to give it a try, that takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication, because the grip changes can be very minimal and it can change a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard transition to make. I mean, I've made the simplest of transitions from holding my grip lower to maybe holding my grip a little bit higher, and even that took time for me when I was switching to it. So, especially if you're going from continental to Eastern or Western or semi, or you know, there's a lot of things that you have to kind of take into, you know, your game and say, okay, hey, I gained this, but what did I lose in this? So can I gain those back? If I can't, then maybe it's not worth it. But if you can gain things and then the things that maybe you're struggling with, gain those back and then have this new game, I mean, hey, that is entirely up to you. I think it is never a bad idea to try new things and experiment with, you know, your paddle, you know, how you hold it, all that stuff. But it is kind of a grind to really go from one thing and then just say, okay, I'm going to try something else because someone told me I should do this, you know?
Yeah, no, it's really good, dude. Really good. Yeah. Sorry, just trying to tee up some questions here. No. Okay. Yeah, it's really good, dude. It's really good. Okay. So we'll hop into the next one here. How do I return balls that come my way with a lot of spin? So why are you laughing there, dude? Okay. I don't know what's going on with this guy.
Can you repeat that question?
All right. Maybe Caden's thought process is a little different here. But basically, how do you return balls that are coming your way with a lot of different spin? And I get this a lot, and we deal especially at lower levels, even at higher levels. But when you're receiving a lot of topspin, a lot of slice, right, a lot of different things like that, what do you just generally, and again, this is going to come down to shots, like what kind of spin are you receiving and where you're at on the court, but generally, Caden, what would you say?
I always have a little rule in pickleball for when I'm returning, and obviously it's different for wherever court you are at or wherever you're playing, but you should always be 2, 3, maybe even 4, who knows, steps behind the baseline when you're returning. And I think the most common thing I see is just people kind of standing in random spots because they don't really know where to be. But if you're at the baseline returning, give yourself some space, give yourself some time. And regardless of whether someone is giving you a lot of power or a lot of spin, it always just gives you a little bit more time to react and get ready. But the second thing I would say is your preparation. Right. So give yourself enough space and time to return whatever kind of ball is coming your way. But how you prepare for the return coming your way is really important, because I see people kind of start to move to the return like as it's in front of them or as the ball's, you know, kind of approaching them. You guys need to be pretty much preparing as that ball's coming over the net to make your swing. And I just think players more oftentimes than not just react too late. And especially when, you know, let's say I'm a 3-5 and I'm now trying to play 4-0 and I'm seeing a different type of pace or a different type of ball. I'm used to playing the 3-5s and I'm used to reacting to that and being ready for that. And as soon as I see something different, I'm just too slow. So just react earlier, be a little bit more prepared. Preparation is a lot, and it goes a long way in pickleball.
Yeah, for sure, Kaden. I would say just in general, now there's different, it's very, very nuanced. There's a lot of different things. But two things I can think of. Number one is going to be creating enough space. And you already talked about that. And Kaden already kind of pushed to that. But again, when a ball is coming with tremendous spin, it really doesn't matter if it's topspin or slice. Now, topspin is going to kick up or out. Slice is going to stay low or, you know, could stay mid. But sometimes slice is really low. Creating adequate space, again, on the topic of on the rise or hitting a short hop, you don't want to hit balls right off the bounce because it's very difficult to handle. So just for example here, let's, and again, there's so many scenarios when we talk about spin, but let's talk about topspin dinks and slice dinks at the non-volley zone. When you see players, let's take the ladies game, for example, what you'll see is on the forehand side, you'll see kind of topspin dink cross court rallies.
Yeah.
And they create enough space. Like you'll see Anna Lee against a Catherine or something like that, hitting topspin, but letting it bounce, getting behind the ball,
right,
shuffling their feet. Even with slice dinks, we can talk about the men's game or women's game, whatever, but hitting these cutty slices. What you will not see players do is short hop or just they got to move their feet, get way behind the ball, right, so that they let that ball come up and they typically will slice it back or reset it middle. But that's going to be huge. So
no, 100%.
All right, so now let's get into this one. Double-handed backhand volleys, blocks and drops. The majority of the time I use a one-handed backhand and it's been effective. But at higher level play, I feel like my backhand putaways aren't as powerful and would love to have a better two-handed backhand putaway. But I often feel like it limits my mobility and reach when I'm gripping the paddle with two hands. Also, let's stop it right there. So thoughts on the two-handed backhand. It's interesting because you talked about in the very beginning, but thoughts on two-handed backhand and what this guy or gal is answering the question.
Yeah, I think a two-hand backhand is always a good weapon to have. Always a good weapon to have. Why? Well, you do lose a little bit on reach, but you gain a ton in stability. You gain more in power. So when he says put away, I'm assuming it's...
Her.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, him or her. Sorry, I thought you said him, but... I don't know what they're talking about in terms of put away, whether it's here or whether it's higher, like put away.
Yeah, we'll say somewhere.
Maybe somewhere in the middle here. You shouldn't be hitting a two-hander like this, okay, guys? You shouldn't be. But in this case, if you feel like you're not able to hit the ball as hard with the one-hander and as you're playing higher level players, you could look to add that to gain a little bit more power. I know Jordan, when he wants to put the ball away on me on the backhand side, he definitely whips out the two-hander. It still doesn't work for me personally.
Yeah, usually when I try to put it away on Kaden, I just need a couple fingers on.
Yeah, I mean, usually when he tries to put the ball away on me, like I like close my eyes and I'm like, it's just so easy, you know. But yeah, no, I think the two-hander definitely adds to that put away, gives you a little bit more power. Obviously, you know, your setup and preparation is everything on the putaways. So if you can get that ball in front and really contact that well, I mean, you see the ladies on the tour right now absolutely crushing the ball with that two-hand.
Crushing.
Yeah, no, literally crushing that ball with the two-hand backhand. So if that's something you are willing to put the time into,
all right,
I would say go for it.
I like it. Actually, believe it or not, there's a lot of things. So before we do an intensive, we do a Zoom call to personally talk to the player and how we can coach them the best way and talk about, you know, what they want to improve and stuff. Interestingly enough, a big one, especially at 4.0 levels, that I get asked all the time is, hey, can we work on some two-handed shots?
Every time.
And that's becoming more and more of a thing. So just like Caden said, one of the very few things that you lose with the two-hander, and there's not a ton, but is the reach, okay? Yeah. Power, control, stability. You do gain a lot with the two-hander, and obviously almost all the ladies on the tour are doing that. A lot of the guys are bringing in. So it's not just a girl or
girl guy thing. It's
girl guy, woman man thing.
Just pickleball now.
It's just, it really does provide another source of defense in transition and also offense up at the non-volley zone line and ground strokes and things like that. So yeah. I am a big, huge advocate learning two-handed shots eventually. You don't have to right away. But if you are developing your game, it's something that you're, I think it's just good to have. And this is coming from somebody that the first 5 years of playing, okay, I hit zero two-handed shots. Now today, I've evolved my game with the evolution of the game and also learning a lot about strategy, technique, and different things. I've added a lot of two-handed shots. So just for you, those of you watching, few things, a few just case scenarios where it would be good to start adding it, and you know, maybe come to intensive if you want to learn it. But number one, resets in transition, digs in transition, kind of like that defense, right? Adding that stability. Number two, it's obviously drives, having a drive on your backhand side. Because what do most people do on their backhand? They actually, most players have a forehand drive,
right?
Somewhat, even if they're lower level, but they don't have a backhand drive,
right?
So adding some offense there, and then what Caden just alluded to, which is like swinging volleys. So
yeah,
really good stuff. Let's hop into the next one. I am practicing a topspin dink and topspin third shot drop.
Nice.
I see the tournament players finishing over their dominant side shoulder. Oh, huh? Okay. Often these days, I assume since the majority of them are tennis players, is to keep them from extending through too much. I'm a tennis professional and I have been told to follow through on my shots for pickleball, particularly at the non-volley zone line. But I want to know your input on this. I'm gonna start this off, Caden, by saying my views, but I'm a student of the game. I'm studying a lot of different shots and topspin and things like that. Topspin is generated by a low to high motion, no matter how you slice it. There's a lot to go into the stroke. Go ahead and check out a lot of our videos. We're gonna be doing more on it.
Yeah.
But when we're swinging up on the ball, that's how topspin is created. So that being said, the finishes, so again, in dropping that paddle head down below the ball is really important as we create topspin, but the way we finish can vary a little bit depending on where our target is and maybe where our follow through is. Sometimes I finish a little over here, maybe if I'm going cross court, more like a dink. Sometimes I will finish more at head level or that right shoulder. So I think it's very hard to show, but we're gonna do more videos on this, but it's very situational. But yeah, without getting too far in it, that's my answer. Anything that you just wanna add, Caden?
I would say at the baseline with topspin, you can be a little bit longer and extend through it a little bit more. When I hit my topspin, I'm usually following through to my shoulder. But as I get up towards kind of like the kitchen line and the transition area, my follow through shortens up just because I know that ball's going to be coming a little bit quicker. So my follow through actually kind of stops more at my face just so I'm, you know, kind of ready for the quick volleys or the attack, or even maybe, you know, the defense. So, you can be longer back at the baseline, up at the kitchen line. You do have to be a little bit shorter, a little bit smarter with where you're following through, because obviously if you're following through at your shoulder at the kitchen line or the non-volley zone or non-volley line, I mean, you're going to get crushed if you're following through at the shoulder. So keep those a little bit shorter.
All right. All right. Here we go. Next one here. Kind of we just kind of talked about it, but backhand drive from the baseline. I've been trying to figure out if I should switch from my one-handed backhand to a two-handed backhand to be more consistent. Either way, it will take practice, but I don't know which is more effective in pickleball. Thoughts there, Caden?
Yeah. I obviously have never seen this guy hit a backhand drive, so I can't say it's good or it's not. But if you are struggling with that one-hander, then you know what? Yeah, absolutely. Go for the two-hander. Try it out. See if you can get a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more consistency out of it. If that's the case, then yeah, stick with it. If it doesn't work out, then go for the one-hander. But obviously, I can't tell based off of just the question.
Yeah, Caden, what do you do? And you may not drive much on your backhand side, but if you do drive on your backhand, what do you do personally?
I mix it up.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, like typically I do drive every now and then on the backhand side just to keep opponents honest and kind of on their toes.
Yeah.
I will say in tournaments, I have whipped out a two-hander. I've also whipped out a one-hander. So I just like to keep my opponents guessing, and kind of really not really sure what I'm doing. And that's one of my strengths in pickleball is I would say I am pretty deceptive with my shots. And so if I can keep my opponents at the kitchen line guessing, not really sure what's coming their way, that's kind of what I roll with. So I'll whip out a one, I'll whip out a two, I'll whip out a three.
Oh, three hands. Nice. For me, coming from someone who didn't use any two-handed shots, and ironically, best part of my tennis game was my two-handed backhand. I just didn't do it the first part of my...
Yeah, but to be fair, when you started playing pickleball...
Yeah.
When you started playing pickleball, everyone was like... You don't put two hands on him.
No, I know. Yeah. I know.
And then you don't do that.
I know. And then
that's like you were Satan's child if you were putting two hands on him.
Then the waters came out. Everyone was like, nope.
Ain't going to work.
Yeah. 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 And then look at it today.
Right.
But I would say for driving the ball, if you're trying to develop someone, and my kind of like view has changed, but this is why. I mean, even working with lower levels, when I say the lower levels, like 3-0, 3-5, I've taught some lower level players to hit a pretty nasty two-handed backhand. And for the fact of, power, control, your footwork has to be really good, but it's just easier. You have a little bit more control and you have better control of your paddle angle during contact because you're using your offhand. So
right.
I would recommend to experiment at least with a two-handed drive. I think even at lower level, it's going to be a little bit tough to really get a very consistent one-hander. And that just has to do with having two, controlling with one. But that's my take on that. I think that if you're maybe coming from racquetball or something like that and you have experience with a one, hitting it and you can get that, then that obviously, if it's working for you, it's working.
Right.
But we're even seeing the transition. I can name less than a hand, so five or less pros in the game today that drive the ball with one hand.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you know who they would be?
Jay Devilliers. Spencer Smith.
Dude, I'm surprised you got those two.
Besides that, man, Caden Nemoff.
Okay, but you're not taking full drives from the base.
No, you kind of. And I'm not really a singles player, right?
Yeah. Like, no, just that being said, okay, one of the reasons that Ben Johns is even nasty today, and he's even highly improve his singles game is adding that two-handed backhand.
Yeah.
So just goes to show you, that's my thoughts and something to think about.
No, for sure.
All right. I am frequently missing shots down the middle. My reaction time is slow, so I need something to look for, which can help me be more prepared when I'm at the net. Now, Caden, I have a really, I have a good answer for this. What is your thoughts there?
It's shading. You're probably, ooh, is that what you're going to say?
No, go ahead.
Oh, well, typically if the middle is open, that means someone's not doing their job.
I could do.
So, I mean, you guys have to remember that even if you're not hitting the ball, and that means your partner is or your opponent is, there's always a position that you need to be covering, which means you should never just be kind of standing in the center of your court and saying, well, I'm in the right position, because every ball that moves left or right, you should typically be following it, and you should be shading and following and moving. So, you know, sidelines and middle are covered.
Yeah, I like it. No, yeah. No, yeah, Caden, that was good.
Did I take your answer? No.
No, you're good, man.
I'm good.
This is why I hired him. This is why he's a good coach, folks. Good coaching provides good results, all right? Take it to the bank. Anyways, here we go. So I get this question a lot, and we talk about strategy. We talk about shading. We talk about a lot of nuances in the game, Caden.
Yep.
But when somebody, when balls are just coming past you,
oh, yeah,
like in the middle, like, you know, and this happens a lot on lower levels where they're playing, then split the middle, split. I mean, they're just winners all over place in the middle. Yeah. The main reason is not like quickness, mobility, or anticipation.
Sure. Right.
The main reason is positioning.
Yep.
If you're not in a good position to cover the middle, it's going to go by through the middle.
It's
so
go right past
So what Caden's talking about is shading. When that ball is cross court from you, it is your responsibility to cover some portion of the middle, because your partner has got to cover the line, especially if that ball, the wider that ball gets.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa. So,
you know, yeah, no, it's the most common thing I see, honestly, is just people standing in the center of their half, and I'm like, guys, you got to move. They're like, what do you mean? I didn't hit the ball.
No, that's good. All right, we're going to get to last few questions here. I don't want to make this pod too long, but again, thank you so much. If you're watching this, if you're listening to this, we appreciate you.
We love you guys. Go out there
and leave a 5.0 review on wherever you're listening.
6.0 if you can.
Yeah, 6.0. I know they don't do 6 stars, but you know, go ahead, Apple podcast, whatever. Leave us a review,
you know, or give us a, you know, a like and a subscribe and comment on YouTube. Yeah, you know, you
or find cool us like a that. Big sponsorship that would help too. Or that would really help the channel, honestly.
Or say hi to me when I'm at tournaments. That's always nice.
All right, overhead shots, correct angle, and whether to hit hard or soft. I'm not a power player, so I want to use what power I have strategically. Okay, that wasn't written well. But overhead shots, I think he's asking, should he use kind of power or overhead angles? And you kind of talked to me about this on the court yesterday.
Yeah, I did.
Caden. But when we're receiving something above head level, the majority of players, I think about hitting the crap out of the ball.
True.
Which isn't bad, but I see, especially at higher levels, we see this, there's a lot of points that can be actually ended sooner.
Yep.
Sooner. And partially, and part of that is hitting more angled overheads. And I think we have a video on this. If not, we're going to come out with one. But Caden, experience on just powering through on your overheads and angles.
Yeah, I mean, so not coming from a tennis background, the angles on the overheads were a little bit harder for me, especially since I was doing it with my offhand.
You
know, the overhead can be very natural for most, just because, you know, you throw right-handed, you play right-handed, and just a natural throwing motion for most of us, but for me it wasn't. So believe it or not, I've actually messed around a little bit with switching hands on my overheads.
I was gonna tell you that. I know you messed around with that, but well, because Caden's a natural lefty, and you also we talked about how you have more power
Yeah.
With your left, for sure. I don't know. As a coach, if I were you specifically, and again, this is going to apply to like 1% of the people.
Right.
But if it's high and you have freaking time, that's I would switch over.
That's what
bro.
I'm saying, man. That's why I've been doing it. That's why I've been doing it. You know, but it's kind of wild because, like in doing so, I've also found like in switching hands, because I get more power, I've also found like if I keep that paddle in my right hand, like I mean, over time I've developed how to hit a little bit more angle on my shots. And I really do think that angle and maybe a little bit less pace goes a lot farther than just hitting the crap out of the ball and hitting it straight at your opponents. Only because unless they're at the kitchen line and moving all the way back to the baseline to retrieve your overhead, good chances are, especially with higher levels, if they're just hanging back at the baseline, your overheads that you're hitting at, you know, 100% for yourself are still going to come back. Angle gets them out of position, gets them off the court. You know, there's just a lot more that opens up when you put a little bit more angle on your overheads, and they don't have to be 100% as well. So,
yeah. I like it, dude. Really good. Okay, so now, last question here. Well, you know,
it's the last question of the day.
Yeah, we're gonna do another one of these, but here we go.
How many have we answered?
I don't know. Maybe 10, 12, 15.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. In a firefight, how do I not hit it straight back where it came? So that's a very short question.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, players do it all the time.
It's true.
But Caden, practically, okay, how can somebody not do that?
So believe it or not, when we first started drilling back Concord days, I actually used to have a habit of kind of just like working, like especially when we were drilling, the goal was to just continue to get the ball back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And then I would get into games and I would like have easy balls here and I would just be like, oh, here you go.
Yeah.
And so it got really frustrating for me. But one thing that I eventually learned over time is like, okay, when you're drilling, you need to drill how you would play.
Yeah.
Right? So when you get to the game, once you're playing, you can play how you would drill.
Yeah.
Right? So drill how you play so you can play how you drill. Right? And one of the biggest things that like I started to make adjustments on while I was in firefights was one, paddle positioning of my opponent, if I had that time. Sometimes you don't. But the second thing is
sorry, say that. What do you mean about the battle position?
Just like it, like as soon as your ball is coming my way, I'm trying to like, as I'm kind of focusing on the ball, I'm kind of watching where you're following through.
Got it.
Right. It's hard to do. I'm going to be honest. It's hard to do. But if you can't focus on that, the biggest thing that I would say personally for you is to focus on where you're following through with your paddle. And the only reason why I say that is because wherever you decide to send your paddle is where that ball ends up going, right? So if you're sending that ball back to your opponent, you know, right to their chest, that usually means you're doing a good job of keeping your paddle straight and sending it back to your opponent. But now you need to start working on sending it a little bit more to the right or a little bit to the left, or who knows, maybe back to the center based off of where your opponent is at and what they're doing.
Yeah. Like it, dude. Yeah. Drilling.
Yeah.
You know, now we do a lot of this higher level stuff too in our intensives, but like the biggest thing, like just a quick counter drill, and we have some videos and stuff on volley drills that Caden and I did a while ago. Yeah. But doing stuff like that, but really just when you're practicing. So when I'm warming up volleys, I am warming it up cooperatively.
Right.
Right. So we're getting in the groove.
Getting the feel of it. Yeah.
And then at some point, I think it's really good to now, basically what we just need to do, right? We just need to start to move that ball away from the body. That's all we need to do, because that's what happens when, that's a problem when we get into firefights. We're just looking at constantly the person in front of us, and it's very it's hard in the beginning to get it away from the person that you're kind of looking at, but strategically and just drill wise, if you can start to just, and when I take a ball here and I'm like, I'm pushing it here right at you, a slight angle change would send that ball to your dominant side or to your left side. So we're not even talking about like a huge, like big angle change on your paddle.
Yeah. But
again, yeah, that follow through going more here, so that you can focus on. Or if, you know, if you're constantly going there, maybe your paddle's also angled straight on. So I might
change that paddle angle slightly.
Use my wrist. Now I'm not flicking, but I might use my wrist to just a little bit, bend my wrist a little bit to get my paddle face, face a different way.
For sure. No, that's awesome.
All right. What do we got, Caden? Is that it?
Well, that's it. That's all we have for you, folks. We do really appreciate all of you guys listening and enjoying our content. If there is anything that you guys, possibly want to see out of us, always feel free to leave a comment down below. Tuesday Night Pickleball, one last reminder. I do have a couple matches coming up in the next couple weeks. So there's a match next Monday, and then the following weeks after that, I play the next 2 weeks. All right. Now, Jordan's bringing in a special little wheel here that I'm about to spin. And before we end off today, we're going to have a little bit of fun. So here we go.
All right. We got the top spin wheel here, under spin wheel, whatever you want to call it.
Pickleball.
We got to come up with some new ones. Did we do? We might have done that one last week.
I think we did. Here we go.
Let's go again.
Run it back one more time. Best pickleball win.
We got that one too.
Did we?
We got that one a couple weeks ago. Look, guys, we are just.
Who did we say?
I talked about, yeah, we did.
Well, you played Ben.
Yeah, and then you talked about when you played.
John and Stefan?
No, who? You talked about when you had AJ Kohler.
Oh.
So let's give it another. Let's give it another whirl. Sorry, folks.
One more time, guys. One more time. We got to update this a little bit. Dude.
Here we go, folks. Spinning the wheel.
Pickleball first date?
Yeah, that was that one that
anyways.
You know what?
Dude.
So I got one.
Okay.
Whoop. Worst advice. Okay, so
worst
really
advice
quick,
ever given to
let's,
you.
Let's leave in the comments below. Obviously, you can tell how much we prepped for this here, but leave a comment below some interesting things we can talk about and add to this wheel. We want to make it interesting. We want to make it fun. Worst pickleball advice you've heard in the last month?
Okay. In the last month?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, this, by the way, this is hilarious. Caden, we talked about how you are scrolling through TikTok, scrolling through, and then you watch these
Instagram reels.
Coaches kind of coach, and Caden loves the social media coaching. By the way, folks,
videos.
Let's not get in the habit of listening and applying everything that everyone says out there. Everyone teaching on YouTube doesn't mean they're good. There's some good content, solid content out there, but there's more pretty bad advice out there than there is good.
For sure.
So
keep
that in mind. That's why you watch our video. So you should have a plethora of go ahead, Caden.
Well, anyways, I saw this reel recently.
Okay.
How to teach a backhand dink. And, reels, I get what the grasp of reels are. You know, you get 40 seconds to really, maybe a minute to really kind of explain something that doesn't take a minute. Right. So usually they'll give you 3, maybe 4 steps to kind of help with, whatever shot that maybe you're looking at. But I literally watched one where the guy was teaching how to backhand dink, and he did it in 3 steps. And his 3 steps were, The first one was lunge. So your weight is on your left foot. All of your weight is on your left foot. The second one was two, make sure your contact is in front of your body and with your left foot. And okay. The third step was hit it. So
nice.
If your third step is hit the ball. What's your worst advice, Jordan?
All right. So basically the advice wasn't the greatest, but there wasn't. Okay. So not really worst advice, but
no, I'm just saying like, worst advice I've ever heard was telling someone, you know, I've heard someone say, oh, here's your ready position. And it looked like this.
Hey, I've seen worse though. Really? I've actually seen worse. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Worst advice. I'll give you one that's more, maybe not worst advice, but let me give you one that has been definitely just evolved over time. And and that is going to be, let's see, there's a ton, but I'm going to go with just never backing off the kitchen line.
Yeah.
And taking every ball out of the air.
Common misconception.
When remotely humanly possible. And there's a ton of times where we're going to have to release off that line and to gain actually advantages.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Kaden, why do you think, or give the viewers two reasons how you can actually gain an advantage by stepping off of that non-volley zone line. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that, you know, you and I really talk a lot about with our students is turning red balls into yellow balls, right? Yeah, and
explain that, dude.
And I'm going to. But what is a red ball? A red ball is a ball that's below our knees, right? And a yellow ball is maybe from our knees to, you know, our hips, our belly button. But you hear so many people say, oh, take every ball in the air. Take every ball in the air. Yeah, I agree with you. You should take every ball in the air until you can't. But, you know, there are times where maybe you're taking a ball in the air that's so low that if you were to just take a step back and let it bounce, you're going to have a ball that's in your yellow that now you can look to be a little bit more aggressive on.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, a big adjustment in, you know, in doing so is going to set you up for maybe some better fourth balls, maybe some balls to speed up.
Yeah.
And in those, you know, in those balls that, you know, you're just kind of now dumping off and saying, oh, I hope I get this over the net.
Yeah.
Now you're taking balls and saying, hey, look, I can be aggressive. I can attack. I can do something with this ball instead of just dumping it off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, really good. Really good stuff, dude.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Nice.
Let's go.
All right. So, I just spun it. And then it landed on a fantasy celebrity pickleball. So, Kaden, if you had a celebrity pro-am going on here, who would you want to team up with? Who would you recruit?
Would I draft?
We might have done this, but someone you would just want to hop on. How about this? Someone you would just want to hop on the court with, and teach. And give a lesson to, you know, just
yeah. Well, you know what? So, I actually like in high school was kind of a David Dobrik nerd, in terms
no
of like
no one knows who that is.
Yeah, you're probably right. No one 40 years old or older knows who David Dobrik is, but everyone younger knows who David Dobrik is. He's kind of just like an influencer. He started like a whole vlog squad thing.
Oh, Majingy. Wait.
Vlogged his whole life and whatnot. It was entertaining.
Oh.
It's just like kind of just like, you know. But he's a pickleball player now, and he has a house like in his. He has a house with a pickleball court. It's just freaking gorgeous. It's
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. So like I've seen him like play some pickleball before. He's actually pretty good. I think celebrity though that I would love to be on a court with. It's not even really a celebrity, but just like you just. Freaking the goat of all goats, Stephen Curry for sure. Stephen Curry,
little Steph,
dude. That guy, him or Buster Posey.
Okay,
him or Buster Posey. Buster Posey, like arguably one of the best giants of all time. Stephen Curry, greatest warrior of all time. Like, those are just guys that, like, I grew up watching as a kid. Yeah. That, like, now that I'm older, they're like, I'm like, oh shoot, like, they're only, you know, 12 years older than me. Like, it's not that crazy. But, like, as a little kid, like, you see them and they look like full on adults, like, being stars in a sport that you would love to play.
Yeah. All right. I like it. I like it. For me, there's a lot of different people. You know what?
Emma Stone.
I would,
Emma Stone. Also, okay. If you're
that's
watching,
your second this. Pick. Emma, if you're watching,
she
this,
played that pickleball celebrity TV show thing. Yeah, honestly, she looked really good in that.
If you're
pickleball wise,
he's talking wise. About her strokes.
Yep.
If you're Emma, shout out to Kate, and you can do a sign up for a
Yeah. If you need some lessons, you just let me know.
Okay. So for me, first love was tennis. I know. But I would really like to have the Rog out, dude. The Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Dude, I love
He would be so good, dude.
I love to have him.
He really would be so good.
He was kind of my tennis idol.
Inspiration.
I think a lot of people's growing up, but I think he'd be sick. I think he'd be great.
Honestly, growing up, if I ever watched tennis, I always watched Nadal. If I ever watched tennis,
I'd like to have him too.
Only watched Nadal, and that's because he was left-handed.
Ah.
And it's so funny because he's left-handed, and I'm like, yeah, he's my favorite. He's my favorite tennis player because he's left-handed, and yet I started playing pickleball, and I started picking up the paddle right-handed. And so even tennis, like the two times that I play tennis, I play right-handed. So it just doesn't really make much sense. But yeah, Nadal.
All right, guys. Nice. All right. For those of you watching, super, super appreciate it. Stay tuned. We have more content coming out. We have
we have a very exciting podcast coming up.
Stay tuned for that. We have a very exciting podcast. Not a spoiler alert here because I'm not going to tell you.
We're not telling you who it is.
Maybe someone who's a little fairly well known. And then we have a lot of really good teaching videos coming out. So stay tuned for that. Again, like, subscribe. Hit the bell, leave a comment below of what you'd like to hear, what you'd like to see, why you're enjoying this pod. And we'll see you in the next one.
We'll see you in the next one for sure. Hold on.